When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
Welcome to Red Leg Nation Radio, your home for discussion and analysis of Cincinnati Reds baseball all year long. Now here's your host, Chad Dotson.
Okay, let's do this thing. It's episode 186 of Red Leg Nation Radio. We got to keep talking about the Reds, don't we? Jason Linden, you're here with me tonight?
Last I checked, I was, yes.
Yes, we're going to talk about the Reds again. I don't know if anyone's enthusiastic about this, but I think we're going to... What's
why
that?
Why would anyone be enthusiastic about this? I'm confused.
Well, let me just explain the way things work here, Jason. The Cincinnati Reds this year... Well, they finished in last place in the National League Central. That's fifth place out of five teams with a record of 68-94, Jason.
Is that not good?
They've had better seasons.
I think I remember that.
They've had 15 better seasons, I think. That's all. Just 15 in the history of the franchise.
Okay. Well, that's so 16th out of, like, what?
136.
Like franchise history, right? 20, that's right.
Exactly. Well, I'm looking at it now. 136 seasons in club history. The Reds have made the playoffs 15 times. 10 pennants, 5 world championships.
Well, that's, you know, that's about average, I think, really.
Well, actually, it's not. It is. I mean, that's really not bad at all. No. And the Reds' record, actually, over those 136 seasons is they've won a few more than they've lost. They got a 506 winning percentage I'm looking at now.
The Reds are the greatest baseball team in the history of baseball teams. That's what I hear from this.
Exactly. So that's why we're here talking about the Cincinnati Reds tonight. This is Red Leg Nation Radio, episode number 186. I'm Chad Dotson, and with me, as we've already noted, is Jason Linden. And, you know, we thought the season's over, the playoffs are going on. We thought we might put a bow on the 2017 season a little bit, and, it was not a good season. We can't sugarcoat that, but it also wasn't
just
the worst year.
Right.
We'll try to make it through this entire podcast with no tears. I don't know. It's a tall order, but I'm willing to try. What are some of your overall thoughts of 2017, and is there any way you could squint and call it a successful season on any level?
Oh, sure. I mean, not on an actual execution of baseball level, no. It was a miserable failure on that front.
You mean the way that the teams that are still playing in the playoffs measured their seasons? We can't measure ours that way?
Correct.
Okay.
But, I do think the Reds have at least a fair sense of who the starting pitchers of the future are, though. Yeah, I think that's legitimate and true. Like, I think, you know, as much as this was supposed to be the year, this is what I've said this 3 or 4 times to people now, but, we all expected certain guys were going to be the guys, namely Garrett and Reed and Stevenson. And we thought, well, we'll have them and they'll be good and that'll be that, or at least they'll be okay. But it didn't go that way, right? Like, those ended up not being the guys. Though Stevenson kind of came on at the end of the year. It just ended up being a different set of guys, and it just took a while to figure out who those guys were. Better last season than next season. I mean, you know, there's some sense of who the rotation's going to be next year, and that's a lot more than we could say in March of this year.
Well, I think certainly they know more. The Reds know more now than they did at the beginning of the season. I still, and I wasn't in the room for all the when the decisions were made. Amazingly, the Reds didn't invite me into the room, but I still feel like this team could have done a little more to learn a little more. You know, I mean, we're still talking about a team where Tim Adelman got 20 starts. Where, let's look at this here. Asher Wojciechowski got 8 starts. Luis Alberto Bonilla got 4 starts. You know, who else here?
Yeah, but, man, you know, I get people coming from that angle that, like, well, why did they throw all of these scrap heap pitchers out there? You didn't even mention Bronson Arroyo, I don't think.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, 14 starts for Bronson Arroyo, who we both love, but come on. I mean, you know, yeah.
But, you know,
how do you justify Arroyo? Let me just ask you this. I'm sorry, and I'll let you get back to your point that I completely and rudely interrupted you on. How do you give 20 starts to Tim Adelman and 14 starts to Bronson Arroyo, but only 11 to Robert Stevenson?
Okay, I'll tell you how. I will give you various hypotheticals wherein that is justified. Okay? Which is what I was about to prove my point anyway. Here are my various hypotheticals where that is justified. One, your developmental people whom you trust, presumably for a reason, and that is why you hired them, are telling you that Robert Stevenson is not ready to start games in the majors right now and still needs to develop, and you don't want to damage him overly. Two, Robert Stevenson is being stubborn and difficult to coach, in which case at some point a message has to be sent. Three, the temporary belief, you know, maybe there's a mystery injury. Like, it's one of those things where it's like there are various scenarios wherein there are perfectly justified reasons for not starting whoever your prospect is. Like, you know, what I was going to say earlier is that, like, you know, one of the things that one of the most important and interesting thing I think that I've learned through ever getting any kind of like press access is that all the players are human beings and they are not, in fact, like prospect robots. So sometimes things happen and you're like, well, why isn't this happening? Why isn't this play? And there's usually a human reason behind it. Not that that's 100% the case and not that we always agree with the reasoning, but it's rarely just because, like, well, we think that this is the – sometimes it's, you know, we don't think this is the best way to win, but we think we need to do it because of next year. You know, it's sometimes it's about this year. Sometimes it's about next year. Sometimes it's just about some, you know, player being a human being. Like, sometimes things happen that, you know, obviously, I mean, we all know this. Sometimes things happen that aren't the public isn't privy to, you know, that I think it varies wildly is what I'm saying.
Oh, well, you know, and I'll be the first to admit that we're on the outside looking in, and it's so easy to be critical from our seat, and we don't have all the information. But, and I don't think the Reds really blew it. I think they did learn a lot about some of these young guys this year. You know, I don't think they were 100%, you know, making wrong decisions at every angle. A lot of the reason that Tim Adelman led the team in innings pitched is because of all the injuries. I mean, you just don't expect that. But I do really feel like they could have gotten more opportunities. There's so many opportunities. They could have gotten more opportunities to get more experience against big league hitters for some of these young guys. And Stevenson's the first one that comes to mind. You know, I look at a guy like Cody Reed. I'm interested to hear your thoughts on Cody Reed. He got one start this year. At the end of the season, he was relegated to the bullpen while Deck McGuire gets 2 starts and Jackson Stevens gets 4 starts. And to me, what that says to me is that 24-year-old Cody Reed, the only reason you give 2 starts in September and I guess 3 more starts to Jackson Stevens, 2 to Deck McGuire, 3 to Jackson Stevens in September alone, I think. The only reason you do that and none to Cody Reed is if you really believe that Cody Reed's never going to be a starting pitcher again. Otherwise, I don't see any reason not to give him a couple starts in meaningless games to give him a chance to try to implement the things that you've been trying to get him to implement. Now, am I wrong on that?
Cody Reed walked more than 5 batters per 9 innings in AAA this year.
Okay.
I don't start that guy.
I do.
I don't. Okay. I just he walked more than 5 batters per start for per 9 in AAA this year after 2.47 in AAA last year. So, like, clearly something's going on there. Like, you don't double your walk rate just, like, I don't know what it is. I do not have inside information here, but something's going on.
I think you're making my point, though.
Yeah.
This is a guy the last couple of years that has not walked anybody. He's had fantastic control. And so this, you know, for 3 quarters of a year, he well, some last year on the major league level, but are we giving up on him?
I don't know. I mean, the only thing I can tell you is I did talk to Cody Reed, and this is completely on the record, and I probably wrote it up somewhere, but like, it was shortly before he got called. I don't know. He was up and down a lot this year and whatnot, or at least it felt like he was. There was a lot of talk of him, at least, I guess. And I talked to him, and this was right around the time Zach Buchanan had a big piece about him, too. And, it, you know, the thing he said to me that really just resonated was, I think I'm thinking too much.
Yeah, I can see that.
And it's like, I kind of think he might be thinking too much, too. And I don't know. I mean, again, I'm not certainly not in the Reds clubhouse. And but, you know, sometimes maybe you're just like, yeah, you're thinking too much. So let's not stick you out on a major league mound where you're probably going to start to think even more.
Well, I think the flip side of that is you maybe show that guy a little confidence that, hey, we know you're going to work your way through this. We're going to give you an opportunity to do that here in these games that are meaningless. Jason, he only walked 9.7 batters per nine innings in the major leagues this year.
Only, yeah.
Oh, gosh. You look at it that way. I'm not suggesting that Cody Reed did a whole lot to earn another start in the big leagues. He went down to the minors. His numbers actually were superficially good in the minors.
It comes down to is just like, it's things that we don't have, that we're not privy to other than what interviews and things come out. But like, it's just like, you got to pay attention to the guy's psyche, you know, to the player's psyche. Like, do you think that a major league start is likely to help him or likely to hurt him in a season that's meaningless? Those are the only questions, right? Is this going to help his development or is it going to hurt his development? If it's going to help his development, stick him out there. If it's going to hurt his development, you don't. And there's not a 100% answer on either of those. You know, each one has a fair shot of being correct, and it's just guessing.
It is. And again, the Reds have more information on that point than I do. I see him giving these starts to these guys that I don't really consider. I mean, I think Dick McGuire and Jackson Stevens have a chance to be. I think McGuire could be in the Reds bullpen next year. I mean, I could see that. And Stevens the same. I mean, he's just 23. He may end up being a starter, you know.
Because the Reds know everything that we know and more, and they're not starting these guys over these other guys that make us raise our eyebrows and be like, who, what, where? So there's a reason. I mean, we, you know, and we're never going to know it. That's the thing, is we will never, ever, ever know the actual reason.
I don't know. You know, I read on Twitter, and I think the Reds know less than we do. That's what people say.
Oh, yeah, that's true. They did hire Brian Price back, and I hear that
meltdown time.
Twitter says that was not good.
I just don't see any upside from my perspective, using all the available evidence that I have, which is admittedly not as much as the Reds have. It's incomplete evidence. But what I have, I don't see any upside to giving Dick McGuire two starts. He's got a great name. Love the guy. But giving him two starts in September when you could be trying to work through these things with Cody Reed. You know, Reds pitching coach Mac Jenkins, there was a Zach Buchanan article in the Inquirer at the end of the season that he and Cody Reed were talking about how they thought they'd found something on the video that Cody Reed was doing differently now than he was doing, you know, a year and a half ago. Of course, my first question is, why are you waiting until September of this year to check the video? But they act like they found something, like they thought they might have a reason for why he was so wild. And so I don't know. If you're going to help the guy get work through it, you got to let him pitch to the hitters that you're expecting to get out next year when the Reds hopefully are going to be competitive. That's the one place. Cody Reed, I think you could have gotten Robert Stevens in a handful more starts. And Cody Reed, I think throwing him in September meaningless games, I'm willing to believe that there's a method behind the madness. I don't see it.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. Maybe they are done with Cody Reed. Maybe they could have done more with Stevenson, though Stevenson did sort of have like a markedly different approach when he got his second round of his second shot at starting. Yeah. I think we all saw that. It was very different.
Certainly, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, anybody's guess is as good as mine at this point. But, I guess we'll see what happens next year.
I think what we have learned, though, you know, we can talk about Stevenson. He was markedly better. I think, though, that you said a moment ago that we learned a lot more about the Reds pitching. And I think that's certainly true when you look at Luis Castillo, who was just a revelation. And I'll never forget that we got him that the Reds picked him up for Dan Straley, who they got off the scrap heap. And we all love Dan Straley. That's not a criticism of him, but somehow they flipped a waiver wire pickup into Luis Castillo, who's just insanely good. And Sal Romano. Were you as surprised as me? I was extremely surprised.
I was pretty surprised by Sal Romano. You know,
23 years old.
Yeah, and just, you know, I didn't see that coming, but he really seemed to get it together. You know, Sal has been around in the organization for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, he did 2 years at A-ball and 2 years at AA. He spent a year and a bit at AA. But he repeated A-ball entirely because his results were so bad. And he's kind of had that kind of coming up. There's always been an adjustment period for him. He really got it together this year. He had some little injury hiccups that don't seem to have been, you know, major or anything to really cause sustained worry. But yeah, no, that was a really pleasant surprise. And I mean, you know, kind of the whole year to me just feels like an articulation of the phrase, there's no such thing as a pitching prospect.
Yes, definitely.
Like you really don't know, you know, remember when like, all the pitchers who weren't supposed
to. I think I've lost you, Jason. Are you there?
Was ever supposed to be that good, you know? I am here.
Okay, I think I lost you there for just a second. Repeat that last point.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, you know, this is going back, but Aaron Harang, I don't recall him coming over with any great, you know, fanfare or anything. Bronson Arroyo didn't come with any great fanfare. And you know, excepting this season, those were both really good pitchers. You know, you kind of, and then there's, you know, you take guys like, I mean, do we all remember Ryan Wagner?
Some of us do.
To go to other organizations, like, does anybody besides me remember the fanfare that was Todd Van Poppel?
Oh, Todd Van Poppel, one of the greatest prospects in the history of baseball.
Right? And what happened? With pitchers, you know, with hitters, it's pretty rare, barring extreme injury, for a highly rated hitting prospect to just flop. You know, the worst that happens to the best rated hitting prospects in baseball is like what happened to Jay Bruce. Like, he's not a Hall of Famer and thus a little bit disappointing.
Right. But still, right? A great career.
But still an excellent career. You take that from a draft pick every time.
Absolutely.
But with pitchers, Lord, I mean, you just don't know. You never know.
Well, think about it like this. 1 year ago today, and you could probably pull up the podcast from a year ago when we were talking about this, and we were talking about this year, what pitchers we expected to really take a step forward, what young pitchers. Probably the two that would have been at the top of everybody's lists would have been Cody Reed, Robert Stevenson, maybe Amir Garrett, maybe those three.
Yeah.
Well, instead, it's Sal Romano, it's Tyler Molly, it's Luis Castillo, who wasn't even in the organization a year ago.
Yeah, when, you know, a couple of years ago, nobody really thought all that much about Tyler Molly.
Well, or Luis Castillo, if you think about it.
They were just like, oh, yeah, those are just some guys. They might be marginal starters eventually, you know.
No such thing as a pitching prospect.
No such thing as a pitching prospect. It's, you know, they either do it or they don't. And yeah, it is complicated.
You know, I'm looking at Sal Romano's line. 16 starts, you know, as a 23-year-old and pretty much dead league average.
Yeah.
As a 23-year-old. I mean, you really can't ask. Sometimes we hear, oh, this, and our old buddy Marty Brenneman's, you know, sort of his one of his phrases. I don't know if this guy's ever going to get it. Sal Romano, you could see him start to start.
You could see him literally. Yes. Like, he literally figured it out as the season went along, and it was pretty fun to watch.
It was. It was like every time out, he learned something a little more about himself and about his, because I was there for his Major League debut. And he was overthrowing everything and trying to pump it up there 98 miles an hour. And I think he still had the 12th highest average fastball of any starter in the National League, or maybe in the major leagues.
I really think at this point, and I'll stand by this, that I think Sal Romano should be ahead of Brandon Finnegan on the depth chart next year.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. There's a lot of question as to whether Finnegan needed to be a reliever anyway. And I was always of the opinion that I think he's got the stuff to be a starter. But
yeah.
Romano has shown me more over an extended period than Finnegan has.
Yeah, Finnegan only has really one full season as a starter. And Romano's got half a season. And Romano's half season was better than Finnegan's full season, at least when you look at the peripherals.
Well, and Romano has the years in the minors as well of starting, whereas Finnegan's been a reliever off and on.
Mm-hmm.
Deep since college.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, Romano really, I think, I mean, I guess we're probably at the point where he's not a guaranteed, like, lock for the rotation, but you have to think he is the front runner, I suppose, to be in the rotation next year.
Yeah, you know, I don't think anyone would say he's a lock for it, except for his mother. And you don't want to mess with Mama Romano, let me just tell you that. But, you know, if I'm Sal Romano, I'm like, listen, I've done absolutely everything I can to be in the mix, to be a major league starter from day one next year. I mean, he's really, it's a great rookie year. You can't ask for anything more than that.
Yeah.
And Luis Castillo, I know we keep coming back to him because he's just magnificent.
He is pretty great.
You know, 24 years old and a 3.12 ERA, you know, and what's the league average ERA, like 4.5 or something this year?
4.5 or something like that. Yeah. And for starters, you know, you remember, always a little bit above the league average, and relievers always a little bit below.
Yeah.
Yeah, boy, just, he was fabulous. And he was so much fun to watch.
Because his hair was so big, and he had to wear his cap up on top of that hair. He looked like Oscar Gamble sometimes.
Well, I was thinking of the pitching. But
yeah. Oh, yeah, that too. Jason, you know, I'm looking at it. He only had 3 wins, 3-7 this year, 3 wins, 7 losses.
Yeah, the win is stupid.
Yeah, I don't think he's very good if you look at it that way. He just won 30% of his starts.
Yeah.
Actually, he started 15 games and only got 3 wins. Garbage.
Frankly, that's remarkable to me.
Yeah, given
the offense that the Reds had, which was not a bad offense this year, that he somehow managed only 3 wins, like, that's just, I mean, that might be, I know early on especially, I think he was having a little bit of, like, rookie jitters, or like he was walking a few more batters than you would expect. And I think his pitch count was getting worked high. So, you know, unless I'm really off.
Also, look at his game log. He pitched against some of the best teams in the league. For like his first 10 starts, they were all against teams with a winning record.
Oh, yeah.
So that played into it, too.
Yeah. So that, yeah. But yeah, he had a bunch of sort of like 5-inning. The bullpen was a significant contributor to a lot of his starts.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, Lord, he's a rookie and still was great. So that's fine. I have no problems with that. But yeah, no, he had some rough competition. That's definitely for sure.
So Castillo, age 24, Sal Romano, age 23, and Tyler Molly, age 22, who was had 4 starts, 2.7 ERA. Even though he really didn't do some of he walked more batters than we saw from him in the minor leagues. But I think those are the three guys that took visible steps forward. If things break just right, those three guys could be in the starting rotation next year.
Yeah. Definitely. And I mean, you know, the thing about Molly, and again, I'll keep repeating this forever, is just that his peripherals, his results in the minors have consistently been better than any other pitching prospect the Reds have had. Like,
right.
Just
from day one, really.
Yeah. Like, he just didn't have the noise that like a Robert Stevenson or a Cody Reed or whoever had, but he's had the results all the way up. And finally we're hitting the point where the results are paying off for him. But yeah, the walks were sort of weirdly high. And I don't know, four starts from a 23-year-old in the majors for the first time, or 22-year-old. Nah, I can't get worked up about it. Like, I don't think it's any kind of like grand indicator that he can't pitch in the majors or anything.
No. You know, and he's a guy where I could see him coming out having a great spring next year, and you never want to see a guy win a spot just based on spring, but I think the Reds can justify it based on his performance last year, or this past year in the majors, and his minor league performance. If he were to come out next year and just blow everybody away, I think he'd have to have a great spring, though, to sneak into that rotation, especially if the Reds are able to acquire anybody to add to that rotation.
And I think especially with pitchers, there's a way to, like, legitimately win a spot in spring, which is that you come in and they can see you and go, oh, he really got that slider together.
Right.
You know, or, you know, like, regardless of results, they can look and see and be like, oh, this guy, it clicked for him. And then that's how you win a spot.
And I think some of that's what happened to Ricky Davis maybe this year, you know, when he came in and won that spot right out of spring training. But you got to say Ricky Davis, Amir Garrett, and Cody Reed. What's that?
By injury bug.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think Ricky Davis's career is going to be derailed by the injury bug, unfortunately.
Well, and sometimes he kind of looks like a guy that needs to be in sort of towards the back of the bullpen anyway.
Yeah.
You know, which is fine. That's the good thing. Some of these guys, they don't pan out. There's still a chance they could pan out as relief pitchers. But
Sam LaCure only started in the minors. He was a pretty good relief pitcher.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's no shame in that. And if Cody Reed's never to be a starter and he ends up being a shutdown reliever, if that were, you know, were the path. Well, okay, I'll take it. It's something. It's not like we're talking about any of these guys are Aroldis Chapman or Rozelle Iglesias.
No.
In terms of talent. And, boy, can you imagine what a starter Rozelle Iglesias would have been?
Yeah. Well, we got to see a little taste of it, right?
Yeah, and he was great. He just...
He was great. Just the shoulder.
Yeah. I mean, and as much as I'd love to see him be a starter again, yeah...
Yeah,
that's probably the best we're going to get. It's still pretty good, though.
Well, and it's one of those where it's like anytime we talk about it, it's like you don't like it, but you also kind of understand. It's not like Aroldis Chapman where you're like, exactly. What are you people thinking? It's no, okay, we saw the injury. We kind of get it. Let's the shoulder.
Yeah, that's one where the available evidence here leads you to believe that the Reds probably made the right decision there, even if none of us like it. And I'm sure the Reds don't like it. They'd rather have a... Because if that guy's a starter, he's no worse than a number two starter. I mean, this guy is a serious top of the rotation guy. And, we'll just have to have a great closer, I guess.
Yes.
Darn.
Yeah.
Now, okay, so, we see the guys that have taken a step forward. And even Stevens is a little bit of a step forward this year. And some of the guys that took a step back. But I think the key is putting aside the chance that the Reds might go out and get somebody in the offseason. And I think you and I both think that they're going to really make a push to do that.
Yeah. Well, they were looking at that, the Japanese pitcher. Who I don't think there's a real good chance that they'll sign him because of various issues. But, they were in Japan scouting this guy. So,
yeah they're I think they're going to leave no stone unturned to improve this rotation, I guess is the way to put it.
Yeah.
But I think we learned a little bit about Homer Bailey by the end of the season. I think that from my perspective, I see Homer Bailey as being a, fourth starter maybe.
Yeah, I think a 3-4. I think that's about right.
If he gets back to 3, I'm ecstatic. A 3 starter.
I have to look at something here on his peripherals real quick because I had a feeling we would end up talking about Mr. Bailey. Yeah, there we go. His September numbers were good.
Yeah.
He had a 382 fielding independent pitching in September.
There you go.
So that'll do. That's the time.
That's a number 3 starter.
Is for a while he had the strikeouts and way too many walks, and then he pulled the walks down, but the strikeouts went away also, and then he had the strikes and the too many walks again, but September, October, he finally really got it all clicking, which was kind of my perception. I just wanted to look up and see if that was right.
Well, and he, this is a guy that effectively hasn't pitched much in 2 years,
Yeah.
Everybody should have known it was going to take him a while. I don't know why everyone expected him to throw his third no-hitter immediately,
Yeah. Well, he was pretty rough there at the beginning.
Sure.
He
had some starts where,
Yeah, it was real ugly. And then, we would get flashes. What was really scaring me for a while, honestly, was just the lack of strikeouts. Because he did have a run there where he wasn't striking anybody out. And I don't care how cagey a veteran you are in this current era of Major League Baseball. If you're striking out 4 or 5 guys per 9 innings, that's not getting it done.
Yeah, you're going to struggle.
That's eventually going to catch up to you. But then he finally seemed to – it sort of started to click into place, and he got back up around, 7 or 8 or so per 9 innings, which is a lot more comforting.
Yeah. I saw him pitch happened to be in New York at the end of July and saw him pitch against the Yankees there at the venerable Yankee Stadium. And there were times when I thought, oh, man, this is the old Homer. I mean, he looked really good at times. And then he'd give up a home run. And then he would, so they sort of dinked him a little bit and got single after single there for a little while and scored a few runs. But he walked a couple guys, and he looked like he was getting frustrated. And you could tell he was sort of struggling with his command and just getting back into the groove. So I hope by the end of the season he was more consistent and looked a little bit more like what we can expect. The key with him is going to be health. As it is with Anthony DeSclafani, who, if he's back, that's a number 2 or 3 starter you can put in the rotation. But with him and with DeSclafani and with Homer together, you can't count on either one of them being there.
No, Homer more so than Disco, because he's at least shown, usually once guys come back from Tommy John surgery and actually make it back kind of the way Homer has, they're at least moderately reliable. I'm reasonably certain Homer Bailey will pitch significant innings for the Reds next year. But
did you just predict that Homer Bailey's going to win the Cy Young Award next year and pitch his third and fourth no-hitters? Is that what I heard?
Yes, that's what you heard,
Chadwick. I thought so. But Disco, you were going to talk about Disco.
Yeah, I don't know. I just can't. He was out all year with an elbow that, quote, didn't need surgery.
Ooh.
Scary. And it's just like, all right, is that thing rehab now? And it was always, you know, we've seen it before, right? The constant, well, maybe in a month. A couple weeks go by, well, maybe in a month. A couple weeks go by, well, maybe in 6 weeks. Like, scary. Okay. Yeah, like, show me something.
Yeah, no. I agree.
I assume that he is, if whatever the Reds get from him at this point, I think we have to regard it as bonus. I think it's a mistake to pencil him into the rotation. I think it's a mistake to count on him for really any innings at all.
But I agree 100%. I think the way we should look at him is just forget about him. Let's just pretend he's not.
Exactly. Don't make personnel decisions based on his existence.
Exactly. Because, you know, he's been hurt so much. But, and here's where you and I get ourselves into trouble sometimes. But if you put on those rose-colored glasses, and he is back, this is a guy who has a 3.99 ERA over three seasons at ages 24 and 25 and 26 in the big leagues. This is a guy who is a, I mean, this is, he's a talent.
He is. He's healthy. He's a number two starter on just about any club when he's healthy.
So let's presume we're not going to have him, but man, what a glorious thing that would be if the Reds are able to add him to the rotation next year.
It would be pretty fantastic. I mean, it, just from a depth perspective, you know, it's one of those deals where I think we can all imagine the Reds fielding a non-disastrous starting rotation, but we, you know, once again, it's one of those like, oh, what if somebody gets hurt scenarios right now?
Right.
Because boy, if somebody else gets hurt, then there's problems,
as we saw this year. But let's imagine the scenario where the Reds go out and get a, you know, say a number two starter. I don't know who that would be. Let's just say they are able to acquire one somehow, and then Anthony DeSclafani comes back healthy as well. You're adding two top of the rotation arms,
and then you got what, Homer, and then you got Luis Castillo, and then you got who for your fifth starter, like
Romano or Molly, or I mean,
yeah.
It's a good looking. All of a sudden, it becomes from one of the worst rotations the Reds have ever had.
Stevenson, that's your depth.
Right? Yeah. Tyler Molly's like your, you know, number three option for that fifth spot. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, it becomes a historically bad rotation to one that could be solidly above average. And here we are getting optimistic again. But
well, I mean, look. Let's be real. It entirely depends on who or if the Reds sign somebody this winter. That, you know,
it's got to be the number one on the to-do list.
I basically, when the Marlins sold for $250 million, I became of the belief that major league teams can afford to pay what they want to pay for players. I know that blah, blah, liquidity issues and whatnot, but that, what did Jeff Loria make off of that team? Like $1 billion or something like that?
I think it was $100,000 billion.
Yeah, something like that. It was a lot of money.
A lot of money.
And so don't tell me. And the Marlins are one of the most historically, like, they're not quite the Devil Rays in terms of like attendance and things like that. But like, come on. If the Marlins are worth that, the Reds are sure worth that. And there's money to be spent. If the Reds want to spend it, I personally believe that they can go out and sign just about whoever they want if they want them badly enough.
Well, it's okay.
There might be an issue with somebody not wanting to come to Cincinnati, which I would understand.
Sure.
But in terms of money, I'm really kind of over the what can they afford as a small market team argument. There's so much revenue shared in Major League Baseball. I'm sure there are more limitations on some smaller market teams than bigger market teams, but eventually I hit a point where I'm just like, nah, I'm not buying it. I'm not buying that you can't ever. And there was, I can't remember where I saw this. It might've been Joel Luckup who tweeted or something, that the Reds had only ever signed, since the beginning of free agency, the Reds had signed two of the top 15 free agents in a given off season ever. Like two ever.
That makes sense.
And it's like, they can go out and get somebody if they really want to.
Okay, well, a couple things. First of all, they have hinted As a matter of fact, said it more than just hinting that they're ready to begin. Dick Williams, general manager Dick Williams, has said they're at the point now in the cycle where they are ready to start investing back into that major league payroll. So, I mean, that's coming. They're going to spend. And when the Reds were competitive before, they spent money. You know, yeah. they had one of the highest payrolls, certainly in the National League. So, but the flip side is, I agree with you that when Castellini sells this franchise, he's going to make more than $1 billion.
Yeah.
And so he's going to make lots and lots and lots of money. The other side is, it's easy for us to sit here and spend other people's money. You know, I understand why he would want to break even, which I think is all they're trying to do right now, is break even. And, you know, whatever that means. But the long and the short of it is, I think you're right, ultimately, in that I don't think money is going to be the reason they don't sign a free agent. If they decide to go the free agent route, if there's even a free agent that interests them, and I haven't looked at it closely enough to see if there's anyone out there that, you know, makes a lot of sense, but I don't think it'll be money. That's the problem. There are lots of other factors that might get in the way, but I would be surprised if it's money. And everybody likes to talk about the Reds as being cheap, but they weren't the last time they were competitive. I think they're just waiting for the moment in the cycle when it's time to start spending on that major league payroll again.
Yeah, what I will say, I won't be surprised, and then this is one area where I don't know, if the Reds go out onto the trade market looking for somebody, because the only player I see on the market right now who I legitimately like better than the guys the Reds have is Yu Darvish. And that's, I mean, he's the elite guy. You know, Arrieta kind of had a weird year. Cueto, I don't think, is going to end up exercising his opt-out because he had kind of a rough year with some finger blisters and stuff. So it's kind of Yu Darvish and then a bunch of who else, you know.
Is Dallas Keuchel, is he going to be a – I thought I saw that at one point, but I haven't looked in a while.
I don't think so. I don't think he's a free agent, but maybe he is.
For some reason, I was thinking.
You're right. He's a free agent.
I
wasn't paying too much attention to him, but it looks like he's had some injury bugs the last couple of years, which, like, I don't know. I don't know enough about what his injuries are. I'm not on top of that enough.
The Reds should give a lot of money to a pitcher that has lots of injuries.
Yes, definitely.
That's a good idea.
You know, but, yeah, who knows? Maybe they've surprised us with international signings before. Maybe they'll find a way to get it done with this Japanese pitcher who apparently can hit too, which is...
Yeah, Ohtani, I think, is his name. The problem is, I don't think the Reds are going to have enough money in their international budget left. I mean, there's that cap that you can spend, and I don't think they're going to have enough to get him.
No, probably not. But apparently the real issue was, and I've been reading up about it, and Doug Gray had something good about it, and then there were a couple of other sources where apparently financially it makes a lot more sense for him to wait 2 years. It's just that he really wants to go into the majors now. And the issue that people think he might have is that he's probably going to want to sign with an American League club so that he can hit, because he hits, but he doesn't really play the field. So I don't know. I mean, we'll see. It's fun that the Reds were there. Like, I like that they're, you know, I feel like the last few years, anytime there's a big international name, whether the Reds get him or not, they're always reported as a team interested, which I find comforting.
Sure. They're looking to improve the team however they can. I think you're right that it's probably going to have to be by trade. And, you know, there's a couple of names that keep getting bandied about, and I don't know if they're actually available, but they both are extremely attractive to me. One is Chris Archer with the Tampa Bay Rays. The other is Marcus Stroman from the Blue Jays, both of whom have 3 or 4 years left under team control. I don't know if they're really available. I don't know why they would be. But if they are, those are the types of guys that are youngish that you should go out and try to spend some money on, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, no, I agree wholeheartedly. And, you know, the Reds are now in the point, it really depends on what they want to do. If they want to break the bank and, you know, or if they're potentially willing to empty out the farm system, partially at least, to get some top quality major league guys, they've got the farm system to do it. Probably they're not having to give away their very, very top guys either. Like, I don't think Nick Senzel or Hunter Green certainly are going anywhere. But, you know, I don't know, Taylor Trammell might, for the right person.
I said on Twitter, and everybody yelled at me, which happens often on Twitter, but I said, I really hope that the Reds trade Taylor Trammell this offseason. And the point of that wasn't that I don't think Trammell is a great player. He is a fantastic prospect. And has a chance of being a star on the major league level if things pan out. He's still young, so he's 19 this year, I think. So, you know, we're projecting a lot, but he's one of these highly touted guys. My point was, if he's traded somewhere, it means the Reds are getting something of value back in return. And so it's probably going to be some kind of a blockbuster deal if they're willing to part with him. But that's the kind of guy that I would absolutely be willing to trade. A low minors guy who has tons of upside maybe, but if you can get somebody that can help next year's major league roster, I feel like they're at the point in the cycle where you got to do that and package him with some, you know, whoever else. I don't know who, but I think the Reds, other than Hunter Green, this past year's number one pick, and then Nick Senzel, who you mentioned, last year's number one pick. Other than those two, well, I wouldn't even call them untouchable. But
no one's untouchable except Joey Votto.
Joey Votto is not untouchable. I'm sorry.
Joey Votto, untouchable. Chad Dotson.
He is not untouchable.
He's untouchable.
I'm telling you, I will trade him for Mike Trout tomorrow.
Nope.
well, you won't. I know, because coffee with Trout doesn't sound as good.
No, that's not nearly as good. Who wants Trout with their morning coffee?
That's exactly.
We're not in a Hemingway novel here, Chad.
Well, that's true. So, you know, say you don't want to trade those guys unless it's some kind of crazy deal, but that leaves everybody else. All these young pitchers we're talking about, frankly, should be in the conversation anyway. I think they've got to do what they can to improve the rotation, and that there's lots of options. They should be kicking the tires on every pitcher who may be available on any team in the major leagues. They need to be on the phone and see what they can do to get something done, because if they don't improve this rotation going into next year, I think there's still a good chance the rotation's better. Because if people are healthy and these young pitchers get a little better, it should still be improved.
Well, to be better, I mean, the bar to be better is right. Very low.
But they're not going to be, let's be competitive in the wild card race better without going out and getting someone, I don't think.
I agree. They've got to sign somebody. They sign the right somebody or trade for the right somebody. I could see them as wild card competitive. If not, they are probably more in the might finish at 500 camp.
I think I could take finishing at 500 and not making the playoffs.
I probably could too, but I'd like the playoffs better.
We're going to keep saying it all offseason, I'm sure, but there's no reason to believe they can't or that they shouldn't be shooting for wild card next year. The stupid Minnesota Twins lost 100 games last year and they made the wild card game.
Yep.
You know, think how bad the Diamondbacks have been in recent years and the Rockies even in some recent years. You know, the Brewers were in the race till the very end. I mean, there's no reason the Reds should not be able to make that little sort of tiny leap back to wild card competitiveness, which is almost competitive. I'm going to be really frustrated. I'm going to tell you, this year, you know, it was frustrating, but we sort of saw we're learning some things, and you can see how they could be good next year. I got to tell you, in 2018, if we're at the end of 2018, they've lost 90 games again. I'm going to be frustrated, Jason Linden.
I will also be frustrated. I mean, this is the year. I don't expect a World Series next year, but I expect legitimate, obvious, visible improvement.
They've tried to take this rebuild very patiently and do the right thing so they can be competitive long term. And if that works out, fantastic. If it doesn't, if it doesn't pan out, then it means they've just doomed us to some more bad years when they should have been out trying to do what they could to deal off some of this minor league talent when they had it. To get major league talent gives a chance at sneaking in the playoffs. Now, I tend to think they've done the right thing, the way they've conducted the rebuild. But next year is going to be the year when we really start to see whether they've made the right moves or whether they have, been sort of treading water a little bit. Okay, we've talked about the pitching a lot, and we've been talking for a long time now. That's a lot to talk about, that pitching. You want to talk about Joey Votto for a second?
Let's talk about Joey Votto.
Is he going to win MVP?
I don't know. He might.
I don't think he is, but he should.
I mean, if you would expect anybody to be bullish on Joey Votto's MVP chances, it would be me. But coming up to the season, I was like, you know, he's had a great year, but he's not going to be MVP. You know, there's no way. The Reds are too bad, and it's a crowded field and all that stuff. But then all of a sudden, I guess he had like kind of such a strangely special year that a lot of people who were not me all of a sudden were in my Twitter feed. And who were not like Cincinnati people were in my Twitter feed being like, Joey Votto for MVP. And I was like, really? Okay. Where I'm at on that now, I kind of think it'll be Votto or Stanton.
I think it's going to be Giancarlo Stanton.
Yeah, that's probably. I think he's probably the favorite because of all the homers.
He had a lot of home runs.
It depends on how sort of Sabre-oriented the votership is, because, you know, not everybody has a vote every year and all of that stuff with the MVP. You know, I think the everyone who's on a playoff team who was like sort of the best player on that team or whatever, they're all a significant like step below Votto and Stanton. You know, Votto and Stanton were kind of, I think, you know, having stared at it a bunch, kind of clearly the two best players in the National League this year. And there's a fairly decent step down to anybody who was on a competitive team. So I think it's going to come down to the two of them. I would bet on Votto finishing second or third right now, probably, but he seems to have a legitimate chance. But it's going to be one of those weird years where the winner gets like 30% of the first place votes or something like that. There really isn't a front runner, but he's gotten a lot of talk, which is fun.
What amazes me is that, and everything Votto does amazes me day to day, but what amazes me is you look at all the advanced metrics and even some of the more traditional metrics, and Votto leads the league, the National League, and, you know, across the board, most categories. And it's his age 33 season. And maybe his best season he's had yet at age 33. I mean, you know, you're talking about a guy who's supposed to be declining. He puts up 7.5 wins above replacement.
My single favorite Joey Votto statistic right now is that for each of the last 3 years, his batting average, on-base percentage, and slugging percentage have all been above his career averages.
That doesn't seem possible.
It doesn't, but it happens. You know, it's one of those things where it's like one of the things that I think the whole PED thing ruined for a lot of people is that we forget that anomalies happen, that there are players who get better in their 30s for whatever reason. Like there are players who have late peaks and things of that nature. And Joey Votto seems to be one of them. Like he seems to be a player. And, you know, when you look at his approach, it makes sense. But, you know, for all the surprise people have over it, I mean, Cincinnati was witness to probably the greatest late peak in the history of baseball, and that was Joe Morgan, who was a perfectly fine player in Houston and then a complete superstar for the Reds.
Yep.
When he was, you know, how old was he when he got traded to the Reds? He was in his 30s, wasn't he? 29.
No. Is he that old when he got traded to the Reds? 29?
29.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, almost all of those seasons except one were in his 30s.
Joe Morgan was good. Did you know that, Jason?
He was great.
he was amazing.
Fantastic. And, you know, when people act like, no, nobody gets better after 28, and I'm like, sure they do. It happens.
Well, you know who does? Hall of Famers puts up seasons like this when they're 33.
And Joey Votto, I mean, is... Joey Votto, barring catastrophic injury, is going to the Hall of Fame.
Injury is the only question mark. I agree. Because he started 162 games this year, Jason. That's every game.
That's every game. Yes.
At age 33, he's crazy about his you know fitness. He is insanely particular about his what he does at the plate. He doesn't take a single pitch off. And what I enjoyed most about this age 33 season, more than anything, I guess. Is that not only was it he called it his pièce de résistance, work of art, but it was the year where I didn't hear any complaints. The Reds were awful all season long. I didn't hear any complaints about Joey Votto, and it's probably the first year that you could say that. And so something has a switch has been flipped, and I think he's poised to, especially if he ages as gracefully as it looked like he's going to, this guy's going to become a beloved Cincinnatian.
Seems like, something's flipped and people are on board now and it's great. And Joey Votto is great and we love him.
He is great and we do love him. Second best player for the Reds this year, Billy Hamilton. Let's not talk about Billy Hamilton. We should probably say a word since we're sort of using this podcast to wrap up the 2017 season. We should probably say a word about Zach Cozart, who may not ever play another game in the red and white uniform of the Cincinnati Reds. And if he has finished his career as a Red, what a way to go out. I mean, just an insanely good season. We're talking, you know, 5 wins above replacement, essentially. 297 average, 385 on base percentage, 548 slugging, 24 home runs, you know, 24 doubles. If you're not a Red anymore, Zach, we're going to miss you, buddy.
It was an excellent year, a really fantastic year for Zach Cozart. And that's just, you know, it's going to be what it's going to be.
Is he coming back, yes or no?
No.
No, I don't think so either.
I think, you know, the Reds have enough infield depth that if they're going to spend money, they need to spend it on pitching and not on a 30-odd-year-old shortstop.
Yeah, I'm just not sure they've got anyone major league ready next year other than Jose Peraza that I'm willing to take my chances on defensively at shortstop.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it depends. There's always the talk that Suarez can play short. And
he has.
He has, yeah.
And he wasn't good when he played short, but he wasn't good when he first started playing third base either. So, I mean, nobody works harder than Eugenio Suarez. So, I mean, he could – I don't know. He's getting a little bigger. I don't know that he's got the body type now that you would expect for a shortstop, but I think he could be okay. Peraza, I think, could be outstanding, even though he hasn't been to this point in his career defensively.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, he could be, but it's just hard to say. But it's one of those deals where it's like, I agree with you, the shortstop is really the issue there. They've got a bunch of guys who could theoretically play second just fine, and a couple at least who could play third just fine. And so then it's like, well, what about shortstop? I would guess they're going to end up compromising defensively in some way on shortstop.
What worries me, if they compromise defensively and if they've got Scooter Gennett playing second, then you're really weak up the middle. You got a great catcher defensively in Tucker Barnhart. You got a great center field in Billy Hamilton, but your two middle infielders in that, you know.
Yeah, that's potentially porous infield.
And I don't like the idea. Because Scooter, not to criticize Scooter, who had just a really fantastic season at the plate, he's not good defensively. I mean, just that is what it is.
Listen, I'll say this right now, and people can yell at me all they want. Scooter Gennett should not be a starting player for the Cincinnati Reds next year. He's going to be, but he shouldn't be. Because the odds that he repeats what he did this year are virtually zero.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's his age 27 season. Oh, man, if there's somebody that is desperate for a second baseman that you could trade him to. And again, I love Scooter.
Yeah.
We went back and added a chapter to our book before we hit our deadline to add a chapter on Scooter Gennett. That's coming out in April. Everyone, the Big 50 Reds, buy it at your local bookseller. But the Reds have got to trade him if they can get anything of value for him. I mean, I
absolutely, completely agree. 110% agree.
But here's the corollary. If they can't trade him and get something back of value, if nobody else is that desperate to trade for Scooter Gennett, I don't think you can go into the season saying, this is our guy. This is our second baseman for the next 3 years. I think that once the Reds have Nick Senzel ready for second base or something like that, you know, I think Scooter goes back to being a super sub, and he'd be a perfectly fine bench player like we thought he was when the Reds first signed him.
I think he is potentially a great pick as like the super sub guy who ends up – every team has that guy who ends up getting 350 or 400 at-bats, like just because things happen over the course of the year. And guys need days off and you know, things like that. And I think Scooter Gennett is excellent for that role. I do not think he should be a starting player on a team that wants to be competitive.
I agree about that. So, okay, well, does that kind of put a bow on the 2017 season? Can we just sort of forget it at this point?
I think we can forget it at this point, yes.
Well, from this point forward, then, we're going to on the podcast, and we're going to keep doing these podcasts over the off season. We may switch to every other week, and depending on if there's breaking news, we'll jump in whenever we can. But count on it being every other week during the off season until spring training comes around. Jason, the playoffs are going on. Is there anyone in particular you're cheering for in the 2018 playoffs?
I will always cheer for Jay Bruce, no matter what. And the Astros are fun.
Well, they are fun. And they talk about a team that was built correctly.
Yeah. And they were terrible for a while, too.
Well, that was part of the plan.
Yeah.
So, you know, Jay Bruce, I agree 100%. But I've been so partial to Edwin Encarnacion over these years as well. So I know you've got a reason you don't want to cheer for the Indians. But those are two of my favorite former Reds. And I would like to see them have success individually, certainly.
I agree wholeheartedly. It's like, it's, you know, for me, it's kind of like when like a beloved former player comes to town and it's like, all right, he can go 3-for-4, but the Reds still win like 7-2, you know?
Right. Yeah. So it's either him or Dusty Baker. Who are you going to cheer for? You know?
Yeah.
All right. Jason, good talking to you again, buddy.
You too, Chad.
This has been Red Leg Nation Radio once again, and I appreciate all of you listening to us, downloading us. It's been a fun season, and we tried to put a bow on the season here as much as we could, but it was a little bit of a stinker. But for some reason, we had a ton of fun here on the Red Leg Nation Radio podcast throughout this 2017 season. We're going to look ahead now to 2018 in future podcasts as we lead up to next season, a season which the Reds are very likely going to win the World Series. You can find us at iTunes. You can find us at redlegnation.com every day. Jason's at Jason Linden on Twitter. I'm at Dotson C, and, of course, at Red Leg Nation on Twitter, where we're going to still be following the Reds all offseason. I said go to iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. We're going to be there. Leave us a rating and a review, please. I say this every week, and for those of you that have already done it, I appreciate it. I'm still going to ask you again, if you haven't left us a rating or review at iTunes or Stitcher or one of these places, it does help new listeners find us. We've had a bunch of new subscribers over the last season, for which I'm greatly appreciative. But the more people you can tell, the better. But as I always say, if you don't like us, keep your mouth shut. Jason, are we going to talk a little bit over the off season? Jason,
a little bit.
Okay, I thought you'd already quit on me. I thought you'd already given up on me, Jason Linden.
3 seconds, I think.
All right. For Jason Linden, this is Chad Dotson saying so long, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Red Leg Nation Radio from redlegnation.com. Subscribe to Red Leg Nation Radio on iTunes or through your favorite podcast app, and join us for discussion of all things Reds at redlegnation.com. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.